Today's podcast is brought to you by Balance 7. Save $10 plus free shipping this week only with code HOWIE10 at balance7.com. Enjoy the podcast.
She's the Boston Herald's wittiest wordsmith, the last woman standing at the Whiskey Priest. Once a very legitimate magazine that we definitely didn't make up named her the Michael Jordan of radio. Wait, don't you think we're laying it on a little thick here, Grace?
Just stick to the script.
Oh, okay. Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's The Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Grace Curley Show. We are going to continue with your calls for this next half hour to 45 minutes, 844-500-4242. Really great night for Republicans last night. Glenn Youngkin beat Terry McAuliffe. And it's hard to imagine how he did it. Terry McAuliffe is a very charismatic figure. And plus, Democrats have done such a great job of gaslighting people into voting for them that I'm surprised that Youngkin was able to pull it out. But we'll actually have Chris Bedford on at 1:30. He's in Virginia right now, and he's going to talk to us about why he thinks Glenn Youngkin was able to do this. And one thing that he brought up was that Youngkin didn't originally lean in to the local issues. He tried to kind of steer clear of it and be a little bit more Romney-esque and go for that strange new respect. And the second he turned into saying, okay, I'm going to defend these parents, I'm going to stand up for people who are sick of this BS, that is when the momentum shifted. And Chris wrote a really good piece on that, so we will get to it. We're still waiting to hear what's happening in New Jersey. It's too close to call right now. But Jared, you gave me an update in the last break.
Yeah, Steve Kornacki was the national political correspondent for NBC News and MSNBC.
He was the guy who was trying to calculate all the fuzzy math while Rachel Maddow, Joy Reid, and Nicole Wallace were screaming about racism.
Yeah, so this happened in New Jersey. He says the early vote was double counted in Hudson County. It has now been fixed, bringing Murphy's total down by 10,732 and Cittorelli's up by 2,842. Cittorelli goes back up in the statewide tally. He is ahead by 200-something votes right now.
You know what I feel like when you gave us that update? You know when the ref during a football game goes into the middle of the field?
Yeah.
And he sets up that something bad happened and you're waiting to hear if it was for your team or for the other team. And then all of a sudden, when he announces and the penalty goes to whatever and everyone starts cheering.
We have two fouls on the play.
Yeah, no, exactly. So that's good news, and we'll keep you posted as that unfolds. A couple of other stories to keep in mind here before we play some of this winsome sound. We didn't just win some. We won a lot last night. But there was a couple of other races to keep in mind here. There was a shocking victory that happened in Texas last night. I'm reading now from Red State. And there was a few actually shocking races in Texas, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. But one that occurred in San Antonio, where the race of HD 118 took place, Republican John Lujan came out victorious in the majority Hispanic district that Democrats carried by double digits the last time around. That's the other part of this, is that it's one thing for a Republican to win in a really red state, but a lot of these races are happening in purple districts and blue districts, and that is where you can really feel like, what do I always say? Something's happening here.
And the funny thing about that is you look at it, it's like, oh, this was in a district that Joe Biden won by 10%. This was in a district Joe Biden won by 20%. Is there really that much of a shift, or were those numbers inflated if we're looking at that now, which brings up another question?
Jared, first of all, inflated, I think you mean overheated. Were those numbers overheated?
Were those numbers overheated that Joe Biden, quote unquote, won by?
Are you trying to question whether or not Joe Biden is the most popular president of all time, more popular than Barack Obama?
Oh, of course not. I'm sure those 81 million votes were real.
Jared, if you campaign as hard as he did from his basement and you have campaign events where you have six people surrounded by chalk circles.
That was because COVID.
Yeah. And that explains why he won by so many votes. Okay. He got the people going. By the way, Joe Biden has already called a lid on today. He is not going to speak. I don't think he likes when his predictions don't ring true. He said yesterday, let's actually play this, Jared. This is cut 15.
Democrat Terry McAuliffe is struggling in a state that you won by 10 points. Do you see his problems as a rebuke of your presidency?
We're going to win. I think we're going to win in Virginia.
You think wrong, my friend. Whoops. But yeah, let me get back to this race here. Republican John Lujan defeated Democrat Frank Ramirez in a special election runoff for Texas House District 118 on Tuesday. The business owner and former firefighter ended the night with 286 more votes than Ramirez, a first-time candidate. That's a 15% shift towards the GOP since 2020. And that's only one race. Republicans win four New York City council seats. And these were in Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. So again, that is...
Not exactly purple districts.
Right. And also, Minneapolis voters reject leftist push to defund and replace police. I think we can thank Cori Bush for this when she got in front of the camera and said, my body deserves to be on this earth. And everyone was kind of thinking, mine does too, though. Right? I mean, can't mine be here too? Minneapolis voters overwhelmingly defeated an amendment on Tuesday aiming to defund the Minneapolis Police Department and replace trained law enforcement officers with social workers. Now, there's a lot of reasons why this happened, but I just want to point out one. One time I read a police blotter facts, and it talked about how it was in some wacky city where they tried to do this, replace the police with social workers, and a social worker got to a hostage situation and tried to talk to the person, and then they got taken hostage as well. And then they had to call the police. So I've seen this with my own eyes. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand how this might not work. And I think in a lot of communities, I still remember Charles Barkley put it so well. He was doing coverage for a basketball game one time, and he said, who are black people supposed to call Ghostbusters? And I thought, it's true. A lot of these communities are minority communities, and they depend on the police. And this has been a slogan for a lot of radical left progressives for the past couple months, but it's not panning out. It's absolutely not. Let's also read here now. This is from Pinkerton from Breitbart. Five takeaways from Glenn Youngkin's victory in Virginia. And the one I want to read here is the culture war issues are winners for Republicans. That has been something that Republicans, I think, have hesitated to lean into. And I just want to give a special shout out here. Not that he needs it, but there is a lot of talk about 2024 and how it might be more beneficial for Republicans if Trump were to pass on the torch, because he is someone who can motivate the opposing side to get out and vote. He has that je ne sais quoi. He drives people crazy. And I understand all those arguments, and I do see that a little bit as well. But I will say that Donald Trump was never afraid to lean in to these issues that a lot of Republicans would not go near. A lot of Republicans were too cowardly to touch critical race theory or to fight against some of this race baiting. And Donald Trump really did open that door, and he was always unafraid. So he deserves a lot of credit for ushering in this debate and for really empowering a lot of parents to not be afraid, because the cancel culture aspect of our society is a real thing. You know, Jimmy Kimmel and all these people can tell you it's fake and, oh, you're just afraid of Dr. Seuss being canceled. Well, you're afraid of a Netflix documentary about Dave Chappelle. So, you know, everyone has their fears, I guess. But the truth is that people will kind of toe the line, whether it's, you know, to keep their jobs or to be invited to the fancy cocktail parties or to not upset their friends and neighbors. But the point where people reach where they say, I don't care anymore if you're going to cancel me. I don't care anymore if you're going to call me racist. I don't care anymore if you're going to ostracize me from polite society, is when you start attacking people's kids, and when you start telling people's kids, oh, you're the oppressor, you're the oppressed, you're a victim. Parents don't like that. And that's what this race was all about. But if you ask, for example, the brilliant minds at CNN, like Kristen Powers and Breonna Keeler, this is what they think it was about. Cut six, please, Jared. This is Kirsten
Powers. This is now, I think, also the Republican playbook is to use these issues to scare people, basically, a feeling out of control, you know, that everything's out of control with their children and they need to be protected from these people with this demagogues and this agenda, right?
Yeah, sure. Let's be clear. Some of it was dog whistle.
Yeah.
Right? Some of it was dog whistle racism.
1,000%.
That's all the liberals have at this point is the dog whistles of racism, the dog whistles. And you know what I'm really sick of? I'm sick of every Republican victory being cloaked in this, oh, they're just afraid. Republicans are afraid. They're afraid. And there's always this false narrative that white people are afraid of losing their power. No one's buying that. No one's looking at these school board meetings. A lot of the parents at these school board meetings are minority parents. They're not just white people at these. So no one's buying that narrative anymore, but they'll keep selling it. They will keep selling it. The silver lining is that they have about four people watching their nonsense cycle of BS. But they will not stop selling this over and over and over again. The only one who seemed to have kind of a moment, a eureka moment, you might say, was Van Jones. Listen to what he had to say. Cut eight.
I think that the Democrats are coming across in ways that we don't recognize, that are annoying and offensive and seem out of touch in ways that I don't think show up in our feeds when we're looking at our kind of echo chamber.
That puts it mildly. Annoying puts it mildly. But he's on to something. And that's what you have to do. If you lose in this fashion, you have to look at it and actually say, what could we have done better? But that's not what Democrats do. For the most part, they don't even talk about Terry McAuliffe. All they talked about last night was Glenn Youngkin, the guy who won. They didn't talk about their candidate who lost and why he lost. Pretty amazing stuff. Let's play one more cut here because David Axelrod was also catching on. I guess Van Jones's common sense was contagious last night. This is cut 10.
I mean, you know, we've become, you know, Democratic Party, what you've seen is it's become a more college-educated urban party in coalition with minority voters. And the messages tend to be moralizing. It's moralizing. Like, we are going to tell you, we will tell you what is right.
Yeah, I would agree. And, Glenn Greenwald also commented on this, and he said, CNN stars slowly admit that their rhetorical posture, everyone who dissents in any way from our decrees is racist and or stupid, is alienating and ugly. But they didn't realize this because they live in an echo chamber of like-minded liberals. Yeah, it's a funny thing to see. And also, it's pretty telling that no one talked about Winsome Sears last night, except for on Fox News. It's an incredible story. We'll play some cuts of that when we return. 844-500-4242. I see everybody on the lines. We will take your calls. Chris Bedford at 1:30. Tons of show left. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Former Republican delegate Winsome Sears took the stage last night after winning the race for lieutenant governor of Virginia. And I want to play a cut here from Winsome. Let's try cut 16, please, Jared.
There are some who want to divide us, and we must not let that happen. They would like us to believe we are back in 1963 when my father came. We can live where we want. We can eat where we want. We own the water fountains. We have had a black president elected not once but twice, and here I am, living proof.
Yeah, she did a fabulous job, and I love how she said, you know, I'm black, but that's not what this is about. I want to leave it better, and I think it resonated with everyone there, and it was just one of many races that showed you where voters' heads are at. And it was one of many races that you will hear nothing about if you tune into CNN or MSNBC. They're too busy talking about how racist everyone is to acknowledge a black woman, Winsome Sears, won the lieutenant governor of Virginia last night.
Ah, come on, Grace, be fair. They did do a segment on QAnon seeing the ghost of JFK Jr. this morning or something like that. So dealing with the heavy-hitting issues on CNN.
That was this morning.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Post-election coverage, yep. I guess. Yikes. Daniel, you're next with Grace on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Daniel.
Hi, Grace. What a exciting day. I have to tell you, I was up majority of the night watching this election, and I'm still a little worried about New Jersey, but I wanted to tell you that, you know, we can't forget that Trump, despite, you know, some of his flaws and how he handled the media, he had wonderful policies.
Yeah.
And it would be so nice, you know, to bring those policies back and to continue forward. But, you know, I think Trump, if he does decide to run again, I think it's going to be his running mate that's going to be very, very critical.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right about that, Daniel, because if you really did take away the hoopla that surrounded Trump and his back and forth with the media, at the core of it, it was just great policies. And I was thinking about that the other day as I saw Joe Biden meeting with all these world leaders. I thought, you know, they used to laugh at Trump when he was in the room with them. That was always the thing. Oh, they snickered about Trump when he turned around. I bet they're crying right now into their fancy vegan soups, wishing Trump was back as they look at Joe Biden snoozing. You snooze, you lose. You pick Trump, you win. That's the moral of this story. Al, you're next with Grace on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Al.
Thanks, Grace. Hey, thanks for taking my call. Great show, as always.
Thank you.
And I want to, you're welcome. I want to thank you for putting those two airheads on, talking about how it's just a racist dog whistle and they're just trying to scare people. Because, I mean, that's very encouraging. If they're dumb enough to keep making the same mistakes that caused them to lose now, that makes me happy. That means I think they'll keep making the same mistakes and they'll keep losing. Or at least we can hope so, right?
Yeah, no, I'm glad you said that, Al, because there's a Twitter user, Five Times August, and he wrote, in quotes, he's mocking the left, and he said, it's not that our ideas are awful. It's not that our way of life is a miserable existence. It's not that people are pushing back against tyranny. It's not the fact that the country is in the tank. No, it's that you're a racist. The left on Twitter this morning. And that's true. It really is the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over and over again. And you would think after 2016 that they would have really had a come to Jesus moment and maybe looked in the mirror and got to the root causes of some of their problems. But they didn't. They got worse. They got more condescending, too. You know, on CNN, they were talking about David Axelrod and Van Jones were commenting on how moralizing the Democrats have become. And then I turned on MSNBC and they were doing exactly that. They were lecturing their viewers, their 15 or 16 viewers, about how racist the voters are. And it's what Trump always said. They don't hate me. They hate you. And all of those people who got out and voted in Virginia, if you think that reacting to that election by calling them racist is a good move, you're out of your damn mind, which is becoming increasingly clear. When we get back, Chris Bedford is in Virginia. He's going to give us some updates. Don't go anywhere. It's the Grace Curley Show.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. We have so much to talk about. Ben Weingarten just tweeted, it's amazing what happens when you lock people in their homes for months while killing granny, telling them they're bigots, making their communities less safe, crushing their jobs and jacking up their taxes, keeping their kids out of school, then trying to indoctrinate them into racist, anti-racism, America hatred. Yeah, it's been quite a few years for us here in this country. And I think last night was a return, not to quote Joe Biden here, but it was a return to normalcy. It felt good to know that, you know, in how I kind of felt, it's how a lot of people tell me they feel when they listen to talk radio, which is feels good to know you're not alone. It feels good to know there's other people out there who are seeing this destruction of our country and want to fight back against it. We do have a quick update here on one of the funniest races, and I don't mean to poke fun at the Republican here. I think he's wonderful that he's doing this, but it is pretty amazing that you have one candidate who's a Senate president in New Jersey, and you have another guy who spent $153 on the election. Jared, what's the update?
Yes, so the latest update, Edward Durr, the truck driver, has a 51.69% advantage to Steve Sweeney, the incumbent, who has 48.31%, 99.37% of reporting is done. So,
all right, that looks good. All
hasn't
right.
been called yet, but...
Now it is time to bring on our next guest, Chris Bedford from The Federalist, a friend of the show and a fabulous writer. Chris, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm currently driving through one of the recently rewon states of Virginia.
Perfect. Don't we love to hear it? Very authentic, Chris, that you're calling us from Virginia. You have a new piece in The Federalist, and the reason I love it is because there has been all this talk about how Glenn Youngkin, it's not that he was particularly amazing as a candidate. He was kind of at the right place at the right time and leaned into this anti-critical race theory movement that we saw happening in Virginia. But you actually had a different take on this, and you said that he was, for a while, kind of going more the Romney route, and then he decided to change course. Can you break that down for my listeners, Chris?
Yeah, absolutely, because there's a lot of folks out there with the Never Trump class, the consultant class, you know, they're basically one and the same, the liberal Republican class, who are trying to claim that this is some kind of attack on Trumpism, this is some kind of a win for Romneyism, and a return to normalcy for the GOP, to go back to the kind of the Bush years and the average Republican. And I don't think that's the case. I think this is Glenn Youngkin's victory. He deserves this victory. He should get credit for this victory. But had he listened to the advisors who advised him early on with some of the major, major firms in Washington, D.C. and nationally, then he wouldn't have won. So he was fairly dead in the water, just not gaining momentum. He wasn't gonna win the primary, it was looking like, for quite a while. He was trying to go the safe route. He was responding to the polling. His campaign office, his advisors were saying, stay away from abortion, stay away from Trump, from critical race theory, stay away from all these different kinds of attacks, COVID lockdowns. He was wearing a mask early on because he was listening to the advice of these advisors who were much more comfortable simply talking about taxes and grocery taxes and inflation and things like that, kind of the classic economic Republican wheelhouse. The people of Virginia, though, had a different idea. The people of Virginia, because of Zoom classes and everything else, had essentially been red-pilled. And they had no interest at all in trying to do some more Romneyism. The crowds dragged Glenn Youngkin back to his conscience. And because of that, the campaign, an internal fight, was able to convince him to sign a pledge against the critical race theory. And that's when his campaign started to take off momentum. He took off the mask. He went back to his conscience and his roots, and he started to connect. And it wasn't just a fake connection like some people can fake for sure. You know, we remember Mitt Romney going to CPAC and claiming to be severely conservative. But you hear some of the speeches from the last week of Glenn Youngkin's campaign. He's evoking the body of Christ in his responses. He's saying, how can you divide us into races of buckets, in the buckets based on our race? How can you teach us not to dream and to hate? We're all one in the body of Christ. That's not consultant talk. That comes from the heart. And that's what pushed him over the edge. It was a narrow victory, but those are the kind of things that pushed him over the edge. This is not a victory for Romneyism. It's proof that the left can lose the culture wars, even in the blue state. And if Republicans follow the people and what the people care about, then they can win.
Yeah, and I think it's also, on top of that, it's a testament to the people are paying attention to the culture war. There's always this sense from the left, whether it's Barack Obama or some of these pundits, that nobody actually cares about this, that it's fake outrage, that it's manufactured, clutching of pearls from Republicans, and that they don't actually care about any of this. And in truth, a lot of these things are very important, especially to parents. And something that Terry McAuliffe did was he tried to just deny that any of this was happening. You write about Terry McAuliffe in this piece. He also helped Glenn Youngkin win this victory because he had gaffe after gaffe after gaffe. But I think what was even more important was he was gaslighting parents in Virginia.
Yeah, and the most famous gaffes throughout history, the ones that really actually have an impact on the campaign are the ones that contain the truth in the end. What actually matters. They're not just, you said the opposite thing. If they did, George W. Bush had lots of goof-ups, but they didn't define what he meant and who he was. Terry McAuliffe said things that he actually meant and just regretted saying them politically. And that's really on display in his defeat speech, where he, the first thing he mentioned, the most important thing to this guy, was abortion in Virginia, which has some of the more radical regime than anywhere in Europe. It's on par with North Korea and China for how radical the abortion regime is there. These were the things he cared about. He was running scared. He was lashing out. He was attacking Republicans as racist, using his own operatives. These were the actions of a desperate person, and that really did help Youngkin, because he, even more than Youngkin defined Terry McAuliffe defined himself, and that's the way that voters should be able to see it. These things should be on display. We got to be thankful for people like McAuliffe and the squad, because unlike most politicians in D.C., they're very honest. But like you were saying about the culture war here, this is a different phase of it. I mean, it kind of feels like the Night Watchmen or the 90s culture war, when they were saying, yeah, these changes to our understanding of marriage, this increasing access to abortion, these are the monsters that are coming for us, and they're not going to stop. And now parents could just turn a blind eye. A lot of people know folks and love folks who are affected by these different battles personally. So it's hard for them to really get excited about it. They're animated. But when you see this coming for your children, when your daughters are being sexually assaulted in the bathrooms and even raped, at least allegedly, and then parents are being detained and threatened and treated like terrorists for complaining about it, well, the culture war is no longer a thing in your neighbor's bedroom. It's now a thing in your child's classroom. And that's going to animate people in a way that's never happened before. The left decided to wage the culture war on Virginian people, and the Virginian people responded.
I'm glad you said that about the radical left being honest, because one thing I always noticed, and I want to shift here a little bit, a part of this culture war to the defund the police movement, which also took a big hit last night. And the reason I bring that up is because when people like AOC and Ilhan Omar and some of these progressives started talking about defunding the police, what really bothered politicians like Barack Obama the most, it wasn't the idea of defunding the police. It wasn't that this is dangerous, this is going to hurt a lot of cities. What they were most upset about was that AOC and Ilhan Omar and the rest of the squad were not cloaking this and sugarcoating this in a gentle enough language for people to swallow. And I think that kind of speaks to what you're talking about, which is this has always been the goal. These have always been the ideas, but certain politicians had more nuance. And now that these far left Bernie Sanders type candidates come in, they're being very honest with the voters. And it's great because we can see what we're voting for.
I love it. I mean, President Barack Obama would say, well, we don't want to deport anyone who for nonviolent offenses. That sounds okay, I guess, to the average person. But if you dug down into that, these nonviolent offenses included having illegal weapons while dealing large amounts of illegal drugs. And if you don't think that that's one step removed from a very violent offense, then you don't have the good fortune to live in one of those neighborhoods where those drug deals are happening, like a lot of the folks who these politicians seek to represent actually do. You look at Minneapolis and you see a real pushback from the voters, especially black voters, who are most impacted against non-policing. But the left is completely masked off now, as opposed to just saying, well, we don't want to punish non-violent people. They're saying, we don't want to punish anyone. We don't want to deport anyone. We don't want people in your neighborhood who are arrested with guns or who... We don't want to have them held on any kind of a crime. In Washington, D.C., it's extremely difficult to get tried, to get charged with anything by the attorney. And the same thing on the Green New Deal. They're saying, well, this is a way to economically remake the country. They're not hiding anything about this anymore. They're no longer saying that, hey, your black neighbors need an upper hand. They're saying your white neighbors are slave masters of the modern world. The mask is off, and it's refreshing to see, because people in D.C. ought to be a little bit honest, and at least they're doing that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Chris Bedford, I have one more question for you. A lot of people now are making their predictions about what these races last night mean for Joe Biden. I don't know if you saw the picture of him coming off the helicopter last night. He does not look happy. I'm sure that's in part because he had to stay up past 1 a.m, which is very late for him. But what do you think this means for his agenda that is currently stalled in D.C.?
I wanted to give him a test today. I was hoping he'd show up for a briefing so we could ask him, how do you think Terry McAuliffe is going to do? Just to test him, see if he knew the race had happened. This is a bad thing for his agenda, because the left, if there's anything I know about them, people like the squad and the teachers are going to double down. They're going to insist that they simply weren't radical enough. The kind of things you hear over and over again, where socialism and communism have killed 300 million people worldwide and failed in some of the biggest economies worldwide, but we just haven't tried it yet. That's what they're going to do. But Nancy Pelosi is not going to be able to hold together her caucus remotely, and nor will Chuck Schumer in the Senate, because the moderates, the folks who are congressmen and congresswomen from Pennsylvania, say, or upstate New York, who may have won the Trump backlash, they're going to look at this. They're going to look at the end of this radical thing, and they're going to say, I'm not going to be your suicide bomber. I refuse to do this. They're going to run from the hills, and their instances of playing patty cake with the hard left are over. So I think as far as the chances of the Biden administration getting through its agenda and these last two bills, the reconciliation and the infrastructure, have gone to nearly zero, which means here in Washington, D.C., I'm going to win a nice dinner from one of my very good friends.
Oh, congratulations. What another victory for Republicans. Chris Bedford is on Twitter at CBedfordDC. He's a fabulous writer. Please check him out at The Federalist. Thank you so much for joining us, Chris. Hope to have you on again soon.
Thanks, Grace. Talk to you soon.
And enjoy that dinner. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. Fabulous. Speaking of dinner, the Aviva Trattoria Tour of Italy dinners are back. Two new dates have just been added, one in Maynard on Tuesday, November 9th, and one on Tuesday, November 16th in Malden. So that would be next Tuesday and the Tuesday after. So mark your calendars. I went to one of these dinners with my sister in Malden. I know Howie went to one in Maynard. We both had such a great time. It's a really fun, festive night. They have wine. They have meals. They have all different parts of the meal. It's like five courses. There's seafood, antipasto, a lot of different things. So you'll definitely get some classics that you would probably order yourself, and then you'll get to try a few new things. And then, of course, it's Aviva Trattoria. Of course, there's going to be a delicious dessert. It was just, especially after COVID, it was really fun to get out. And Chef Anthony comes out, he explains all the dishes. You really feel like a VIP. And I have to say, you feel like a VIP, and you're paying, the price point of this experience is so low, you're not going to believe it. So if you want to get involved in this, check out avivatrattoria.com. That's avivatrattoria.com. I also want to mention that there is free parking at both locations, so grab your tickets. I have a feeling as these get closer, they're going to sell out, especially if Howie mentions it later today. So I would go now, avivatrattoria.com. That's avivatrattoria.com. Did I mention the wine is delicious? I wanted to add that in. AvivaTrattoria.com. We'll be back. We'll take some more of your calls. 844-500-4242. This is The Grace Curley Show.
The Grace Curley Show will be right back. Grace Curley is your perfect lunch day.
Bread, $2 extra.
$2, but everyone in front of me got free bread.
You want bread?
Yes, please.
$3!
What?
No soup for you!
This is The Grace Curley Show.
Meet Virginia. I can't wait to meet Virginia. Yeah, yeah, hey, hey, hey.
It was a really, really tough night for Joe Biden. As I mentioned before, not only did he have to stay up very late, I can't imagine what his nap schedule will look like today. I will ask Andrea Mitchell, as she seems to be able to excuse all of his snoozes during the day. But on top of that, the Atlanta Braves won the World Series. And not that he wanted either team to win, I'm sure, because one's Texas, one's Georgia, and they're both terrible, terrible places, according to the Democrats. But still, it was fun to see.
Yeah, the fact that the team that lost the All-Star game to wokeness got what is the equivalent of three All-Star games worth of money in this series and exposure, who also just happens to be named for a Native American mascot with a quote-unquote outdated tomahawk chop gesture, wins the World Series. Oh, and by the way,
it's almost too much to take.
Who was there at game four, I believe, doing the tomahawk chop?
Was it Orange Man
Bad? It was.
It explains why
once
Joe Biden...
Again, Donald Trump.
Joe Biden really looked like he was going to break down last night getting off that helicopter. And I'm not sure he knows all of what is going on, but I'm sure he senses.
He thinks the Boston Braves won.
I'm sure he senses, you know, with his team that things aren't good. I'm sure that, you know, the ice cream stops have come to an end and people are kind of annoyed with him. And so, yeah, it was not a good night to be Joe Biden. I want to play here a little bit. Actually, no, we do have to do the poll question, but I wanted to let people know that for a long time, for the past 2 weeks, I've been saying, where is Dr. Fauci? Well, he's back. He was on CNN today. I don't know if he thought that all of this other news would kind of allow him to creep back in slowly and people wouldn't question it. But I'm sure he didn't get asked about the Beagles. He did talk about whether or not he made a mistake by closing schools down for so long. I know what you're thinking. He didn't technically close the schools down, but you know what my point is. We'll get to that in a second. Today's poll question is brought to you by Heart Transportation in Maine. Heart Transportation is hiring drivers with full benefits and no vaccine mandates. Apply today at heartdrivers.com. That's Heart with two T's, drivers.com. Jared, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Which one of Terry McAuliffe's heavy hitters was most instrumental to his crushing defeat? Fake outrage Obama, the Lincoln Project, Biden slash Kamala, or Randy Weingarten?
Randy was, I don't want to give her too much credit because...
Neither do our voters.
I feel like what was done at that point was already done, but it was pretty amazing that he brought, out of all the people, you bring in the woman who kept people's children at home for a year to finish off your terrible campaign. I saw that someone had tweeted yesterday, he might as well have stood on that little soapbox and given everyone the bird. Yeah. That was the equivalent when he brought out Randy Weingarten. But no, I'm going to have to give the most credit here to Barack Obama.
Oh, much like a gubernatorial race in New Jersey, things are tightening up. Fake outrage Obama is at 36%, still good for second place. Biden Kamala at 40%, 14% for the Lincoln Project, and just 10% for Randy Weingarten.
See, with Biden and Kamala, while I'm sure it doesn't help, I don't think anyone's listening to them anymore. It really is the Charlie Brown effect. They get up on stage and it's wah, 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 wah. Although, you know what I wonder if Joe Biden going to Europe for this complete phony baloney private jet party that he went to, I feel like that probably got a couple people into the voting booths. Just seeing the juxtaposition, you know, of what's happening in our country and a president who's going on the apology tour 2.0 and falling asleep at these urgent lectures. They're so urgent that he dozes off halfway through. Let's play a cut here from the one and only Dr. Fauci. This is cut 19.
With the benefit of hindsight now, looking back on school closures in so many places, do you think that schools were kept closed for too long in some places?
You know, I think it's very difficult to go back in the retrospectoscope and figure that out. There were so many complicating issues going on. Better to look forward right now.
Oh, to look forward. Wait a minute. You had no problem looking back when you were criticizing Trump or when you were writing your books or when you were doing your Disney Plus documentaries. Oh, and now we don't want to play the blame game. I see. More Dr. Fauci, but when we get back, I want to read a great piece from Fox News. Call in 844-500-4242. It's the Grace Curley Show.